66.
Jim Mack Canyon with you here on The Fan. We got an hour in the books. Means we got three left to play. Looking forward to it. In addition to the mess that is the Jets, the new infirmity of the Mets, dropping like flies, injured players. Yankees look over across the Triborough Bridge and go, wait a minute, you're going to complain about injuries? You want to take a look at our injured list? Yet the Yankees have the sixth best record in baseball, only the second best in the American League East. But they can rectify that because they got a series coming up against the Rays this week. Yes, there is also a big horse race this week. The Preakness coming up on Saturday. Kurt Huber at TBG is going to join us an hour from now, give us some insight to that. And a lot of basketball news, both for those who are still in the playoffs and those who desire to get there someday. And we're hoping to get a helping hand from the NBA draft lottery this week. Knicks fans, it could have been better, but it also could have been worse. We're going to talk about all these things with our next guest, Mike Verkunov of The Athletic, who covers the Knicks and the NBA for that fine outlet. Mike, Jody Mack here on The Fan. How are you, bud?
I'm doing great, Jody. How are you?
Good. Appreciate you coming on board. Do you echo my sentiments, or do you think I'm oversimplifying it when I say Knicks fans, when the draft lottery ended up with the Knicks with the third pick in the draft, it could have been better, but it could have been worse?
Yeah, I mean, look, they avoided the worst-case scenario. If this draft, it looks like there's a clear drop-off after the top three, and the Knicks have the third pick, so they're in that top three, right? Obviously, I think they would have liked to have gotten the number one pick so they could have the ability to draft Zion Williamson if they wanted to, or at least use that as an asset going forward. But, you know, whether it's John Morant or R.J. Barrett, they have a player who could potentially be an all-star one day, and that's a lot better than if they landed with the number four or five pick.
Which, if you say, well, that was not really a chance of happening. It happened to the Cavs and the Suns. They thought they were sitting on a – they had the same percentage to win the overall number one pick that the Knicks did in ping pong balls, but they were slotted behind, and that's why they got pushed back. So, Knicks fans, if you think you got it bad, talk to the Cavs. Talk to the Suns. They're even worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's simple math, right? Like, they each had a 14% chance, and the Knicks lucked out, and they got three, and the other two teams, they got stuck at 5 and 6, and that's how the balls go sometimes.
All right, give us what you think the drop-offs are from, if you believe Zion was and should be and will be the number one pick, to whoever's going number two. Tell me who you think that will be and what should be, to number three and down to number four, because that is what the Knicks are gaining. If there is a drop between three and four, give me your scouting evaluation of the top four guys in the draft and how much difference there is between them.
Well, look, I mean, Zion Williamson looks like he could be, you know, a generational talent, possibly. Everyone's saying he's the best guy to enter the draft since Anthony Davis, which I think was 7 years ago, right? Like, he's clear-cut best player in the draft. John Morant really had a great year at Murray State, and he looks like he can be an all-star point guard one day, and I believe all indications are that he's going number two at Memphis right now, and so that leaves R.J. Barrett at number three, and he's a really, you know, a high-scoring wing. He had a great freshman season at Duke, especially as an 18-year-old, and he came into the year as a guy who was expected to be the best player in his class. And I think that's where the top three are. And then number four, I don't really know. That's the problem in number four. It's hard to project because there's not really a clear fourth player in the draft. Maybe it's Darius Garland, who missed most of the year with, I think it was a torn ACL at Vanderbilt. Maybe it's someone like Jarrett Culver, DeAndre Hunter, Kobe White, who's a point guard from North Carolina. Maybe it's someone totally unexpected, like Kevin Porter jumps up into the top five. It's really hard, and that's, I think, where the Knicks lucked out getting number three, is because number four, there is no clear answer there, and there's so much ambiguity. They have some certainty in number three and who they would probably take, and also if they wanted to trade the pick, who would be there for the team that's interested in trading up for it.
All right, let's talk about the potential trade of the pick. Most people have speculated that if they do move it, it'd be in some kind of a deal to try and get Anthony Davis to New York, who's on record as saying that isn't a bad landing spot as far as he's concerned, and he still wants out of New Orleans. Does the number three pick and Kevin Knox to get it done? Is there going to have to be another future pick involved? What do you think the value of that third pick is to, say, someone like New Orleans? How much are the Knicks going to have to give up if they do want Anthony Davis?
I think it's going to have to be more than that. Boston has the potential to offer, if they so choose, Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, or maybe if they have to do it, both of them, and they have a bunch of future assets and picks and stuff like that. The Lakers have the number 4 pick. They have future picks of their own. They have Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball. And the Knicks have the number 3 pick. They have 5 picks, 7 picks over the next 5 years. And it's probably going to take more than Kevin Knox, if only because they have to match up salaries, too, with Anthony Davis. So you probably have to throw Frank Ntilikina in there. Maybe Dennis Jr., like whatever it takes to make the salaries work, but also to make the offer competitive enough where it outweighs what Boston or what Los Angeles could offer.
Do you think that Davis will rethink his position at all, knowing that he's going to be aided with the addition of Zion Williamson, that maybe he'll stick it out in New Orleans because the divorce got ugly this year? I know they haven't officially signed off on the papers, but we were pretty much in a divorce situation between the Pelicans and Davis. Could there be a reconciliation there?
You know, I think our Shams Charania reported that he's sticking to his spot. He still wants to get out. But their question might be if David Griffin, the new decision maker in New Orleans, decides he doesn't want to make the deal. Maybe he just feels like he can use the year to try to impress Anthony Davis, have him play with Zion Williamson and Jrue Holiday, and it'll be on national television a bunch. And maybe that's what will make him happy. And when he hits free agency next year, all of a sudden he changes his mind and he wants to stay. I don't think that's off the table. At least that's the way that Griffin was posturing Tuesday night. So, you know, it's not only Davis's choice. The Pelicans have to choose to trade him too. And I don't know, maybe they want to give it a shot.
Yeah, but there's three potential options here. One is trade him now. Another is trade him at the trade deadline, which would be huge. A talent of that magnitude to be dealt in season. And the other is, take it all the way to free agency. The one thing the Pelicans can't have is him walking out the door and getting nothing in exchange. You really think David Griffin's got enough nerve to play that all the way out?
I don't know. I think that's a great question to think about. I don't know what he'd want to do. I think they have to first kind of reassess after this week. Right now they have the number 1 pick, and they have to figure out, they probably have to meet with Anthony Davis and discuss where he stands, and instead of just finding out through back channels, and decide how serious he is, how willing he is to budge on his position, and maybe that's the risk they take, and maybe they want to take it into next year, and like you said, wait until the trade deadline and just take the extra half year to really try to impress them, and maybe they feel they can make enough of an impression on him to take a chance like Oklahoma City did with Paul George for a year, giving up significant assets to bring him in and hope you can get him to stay eventually. And that's what Toronto did with Kawhi Leonard this year. It's not unprecedented.
Mike Vorkunov of The Athletic, our guest here on The Fan, talking NBA hoops with us. All right, you've got to keep your ear to the ground on potential free agents coming up this offseason. We know we're not there yet. Teams can't say anything. Players can't say anything. Tampering rules still in effect. Until we get to July, everything is all just off the record and or rumors. They've been flowing pretty good about Kevin Durant and the Knicks and Kevin Durant possibly joining forces with Kyrie Irving. What do your whispers / rumors / little birds tell you as far as how much the Knicks are a realistic shot to land 1-2 top flight free agents during this offseason?
I mean, I'm hearing the same thing that's been reported that it seems like everyone else is hearing, is that they have a very credible opportunity to sign Durant, might even be the favorites for it at this point. I would add the qualifier that we still don't know what's going to happen in the rest of these playoffs, right? We don't know how he'll play when he comes back, and whether the Warriors win the title, and how all those events affect his mindset going to free agency and what he's thinking on July 1 or July 4 or whenever he eventually makes his decision. I think the Knicks are in a very good spot now. You still have to see where they are when he makes his choice in July.
All right, so let's tick off a couple of these possibilities. Warriors win the championship. Does it move the needle toward him staying with the Warriors, or more likely that he leaves?
These are all these kind of counterfactuals, right? it's asking everyone to kind of get into his head, which is,
yes,
I think a dangerous proposition for all of us who try to be soothsayers. I would say, you know, I assume that if he comes back and they win, I think that would probably help the Warriors keep him. It shows how valuable he is. It shows the success that they have. And, you know, he'd be leading a three-time champion. Like, I think that's unprecedented.
All right, that's good.
History.
That's good. You and I disagree. I think if he wins, it increases the chances that he leaves. All right, what happens if they lose? Does it increase or decrease the chances that he goes elsewhere?
I mean, if they lose, it kind of undercuts the argument that they can win without him, right? Then, you know, you remember he joined the Warriors after the Warriors blew that 3-1 lead in the finals to the Cavs, and he came in as the final piece to help them reclaim a championship. Well, if they lose with him, you know, they're not the guaranteed winners that they need to be, and there's a new set of motivations for the following season, and maybe that's the reason for Durant to come back to help them reclaim the championship that they lost.
Okay, so we're on the same page that one. I think if they lose, there's a better chance he stays because he might feel, because he was hurt, that he owes him one. Maybe even just doesn't even opt out of his contract, stays for another year, and then takes it into free agency thereafter. We'll have to see how that plays out. Kyrie Irving, I think he's actually more motivated to come to New York than is Durant. Do they need to get Durant to get Kyrie? Is there a tie between those two? Could they get one but not the other? And if so, which way?
Look, I'll be honest. I don't know what Kyrie Irving wants to do. I'm not even going to try to guess. Like, that's the most chaotic part of this entire summer is there's so many possible scenarios for him, and all of them seem realistic. All of them seem believable. I think, at least for me, trying to predict where he'll go is just a fool's errand. I would believe it if he ended up in Boston, New York, Brooklyn, L.A. Like, there's so many different ways that he could choose to go this summer.
I think if the earth is flat, then Kyrie is a lock to be a New York Knick. But other than that, yes, it's kind of way up in the air. If the Knicks do hit on one or two big free agents this year, does the James Dolan will always be a deterrent to the Knicks storyline go by the boards?
If they hit on the free agents, look, obviously that really nips away at that, right? I think the better question about the impact of ownership, and we've seen this with the Mets as well, we've seen this with the Jets, it's not the ability to win every once in a while, it's the ability to have sustained winning. I think that'll be the better indication of what kind of stability the Knicks have, what kind of long-term competency throughout the organization that they have. It's, you know, even the Mets went to the World Series in 2015 before coming back down to earth. And I think that things like that and how they fare over a long period of time are the best way to judge this.
Fair enough. Mike, great stuff. Appreciate you coming on board. Thanks so much for the insight. Go back to watching the Warriors in Portland.
Thanks, Jody.
For those of you wondering, and Bob will give you more details, the Warriors came back from a 15-point deficit at halftime to get it even at the end of three. But to Portland's credit, they've recaptured the lead. Not a big one, but they do have the lead in the fourth quarter. NBA, Jet mess, Yanks playing the Rays this weekend coming up. Mets trying to figure out who's going to be healthy enough to play in the outfield the next couple of days. A lot of topics cooking, and we'll put the Preakness in the mix at midnight if you so desire. Shoot, I haven't even brought up the PGA. We'll do that at some point, too.